Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Parshat Mishpatim. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member and the Mashkiach Ruchani of the Pardes Institute. And now, Rabbi Schweiger.
This week's Parsha is Parashat Mishpatim, but it is also known as Parashat Shkalim. In Masechet Megillah, chapter 3, Mishnah 4, we're told of four special Torah readings that are done in the month of Adar, surrounding the celebration of Purim. And corresponding to the four Torah readings, there are four special Haftarot. The Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh Adar, or the Shabbat of Rosh Chodesh Adar, is known as Parshat Shkalim, because we read the section from Shmot, chapter 30, verses 11 through 16, which discusses the giving of a half shekel whenever a census is taken. The Shabbat before Purim, we read Parshat Zachor from Dvarim, Deuteronomy, chapter 25, verses 17 through 19, which discusses remembering what Amalek did to us when we left Egypt and journeyed in the desert. The Shabbat after Purim, we read Parshat Parah Aduma from Bamidbar, Numbers, chapter 19, which discusses the red heifer, the whole procedure of making the ashes of the red heifer, and the process of purification of someone who has become ritually impure through contact with a dead body. And the last special reading is Parshat HaChodesh, read on the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, or the Shabbat of Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Shmot, Exodus, chapter 12, verses 1 through 20, which discusses the first commandments given to the Jewish people as a people while they're still in Egypt, all of the things which they need to do for the first Seder that they had before they actually do the Exodus. I will be commenting on Parshat Shkalim at the end of this podcast. But first, I would like to examine the end of our Parsha, chapter 24 in the book of Exodus. It begins in verse 1. And he said to Moshe, "Go up to Hashem, you and Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and you should bow down from a distance." And Moshe came near alone to God, but they did not come near, and the people did not go up at all. There is a very interesting disagreement between Rashi and Ramban as to the chronology of this chapter. Rashi on verse 1 says, "This section was said before the Ten Commandments, on the fourth day of Sivan." Rashi follows a principle which he uses occasionally, which is Ein Mukdam Umu'uchar BaTorah. There is no necessary chronological sequence to the events described in the Torah. And here is an example of where the Torah is recording something out of chronological sequence. According to Rashi, the beginning of our Parsha, chapter 21 through chapter 23, was actually said to Moshe after the revelation at Sinai, after the sixth day of Sivan. Our section is out of chronological sequence, and in fact happened before the revelation, before God said the Ten Commandments. And perhaps one could see this in terms of the syntax, the language. The section begins, Ve'el Moshe Amar, rather than saying, Vayomer Hashem El Moshe, or Vayomer El Moshe. Vayomer El Moshe is the normal narrative form, which is used when things are in chronological sequence. But when you put the Vav in front of the subject, in front of the noun, rather than in front of the verb, very often that expresses the past perfect, which would mean here, and he had said to Moshe. And according to Rashi, when did he say this? Before the giving of the Ten Commandments. Nachmanides, consistently in his commentary, refuses to see things out of chronological sequence. And once again, over here, Nachmanides says that this section is in its proper chronological sequence. It follows the revelation at Sinai. It follows the giving of the Ten Commandments. It follows the instructions in the beginning of our parasha. And this is actually happening on the sixth day of Sivan, after the Ten Commandments have been given to the Jewish people. The question is raised, but why does it say Ve'el Moshe Amar rather than Vayomer El Moshe? So another possibility, when you have such a style, is that it is not telling you, and he had said to Moshe, the purpose of the Vav being connected with the noun, but rather it's to contrast two things, and should be read as, but he said to Moshe, which is contrasting the beginning of our parsha, which is being directed to all of the Jewish people, with what follows in chapter 24, which is specifically being directed to Moshe, specifically the first pasuk, where God says to Moshe to go up the mountain. I will come back to this question of the chronological sequence afterwards. But now let's look at what follows. In verse 2, we're told that Moshe alone goes up to God. Aaron and the elders, and Nadav and Abihu, two of Aaron's sons, do not go up with Moshe, which would seem to imply they go up the mountain, but do not go all the way up to the top, where the cloud is, where God's presence is found. So that Moshe goes to the top. They are somewhere on the middle of the mountain. And the end of the verse says, V'ha'am lo ya'alu imo, and the general population does not at all go up the mountain. And then in verse 3, we're told, and Moshe came, and he tells the people all the words of God, and all of the mishpatim, all of the laws. And all the people respond in one voice and say, everything which God said, we shall do. What is Moshe now bringing to the people? If you take what the Ramban, if you follow the Ramban's understanding, Moshe, in fact, is telling the people everything from the beginning of our parsha up to this point. And that perhaps is also why it says, Ve'et kol ha-mishpatim, because that's how our parsha begins. Why is he telling them these things? It's inviting the response. When the people respond and say in one voice, whatever God says, we shall do. Moshe is teaching them, but teaching them for the purpose of their acceptance. It will be on the basis of these things which Moshe is saying to them, that they will now make a covenant with God. According to the Ramban, the covenant which follows includes the words of God, which were directly said to them, the Ten Commandments. It includes the Mishpatim, which is from the beginning of our parasha up to this point, so that the covenant is being made on a substantial basis of law. Rashi, who says that this is out of chronological sequence, then has to answer, so what is Moshe telling the people? And Rashi comments, the first thing which he says to them is the words of God. Which words? The words where God said, make sure you separate from your wives in anticipation of the revelation. Fence off the mountain in anticipation of the revelation, so that no one will go up the mountain. What are the mishpatim? What are the laws? So Rashi says, these are the seven laws commanded to the children of Noah. These are the laws of Shabbat, of honoring one's parents, of the red heifer, and various civil laws which were given to them at Marah. In a previous podcast, in Parshat B'Shalach, I mentioned how the rabbis understand that when the Jews came to this place, Marah, it was clear that they needed to study Torah, and not only study Torah, but to study a Torah which they could incorporate into their day-to-day lives in order to be able to take the great event of the splitting of the Red Sea and perpetuate it. And hence, the rabbis understand that there were a series of laws which were given to them in this place, Marah. According to Rashi, if this section is happening before the Ten Commandments, before the beginning of our parsha, if this section is the basis of the covenant, so what in fact were the Jews given? So Rashi says, these are the laws that Moshe taught them at Marah. Let us go on to verse 4. And Moshe wrote all the words of God, and he rose up early in the morning, and he built an altar at the foot of the mountain, and 12 matseva, which is also an altar, but an altar of one stone, a monument, corresponding to the 12 tribes of Israel. And in verse 5, and he sent the lads of the Jewish people, and they offer up burnt offerings, and they sacrifice peace offerings to God, bulls. And in verse 6, Moshe takes half of the blood and he puts it in basins, and half of the blood he sprinkles on the altar. He takes the book of the covenant. He calls out in the ears of the people, and the people respond by saying, all that God has said we shall do and we shall hear. And in verse 8, Moshe takes the blood, sprinkles it on the people, and he says, behold, this is the blood of the covenant which God has made with you on all these words. According to Rashi, when Moshe gets up early on the morning and writes down the words of God, this is the fifth day of Sivan. the day before the revelation. According to Ramban, this is the seventh of Sivan, the day after the revelation. The verses that I've just read now describe the process of the Jewish people entering into a covenantal relationship with God. It is very interesting that Abraham entered into a covenantal relationship with God when he performs Brit Milah. In effect, Abraham becomes the first Jew at that point. His name is changed. He becomes a different person. The Jewish people, as a people, need to renew that covenant, or perhaps to create that covenant now for them as a people. What was made with Abraham, who is the father of the nation, who embodies the nation, but nevertheless is still an individual, now needs to be done with the totality of the Jewish people. And the Jewish people undergo a process similar to Brit Milah. In circumcision, there is blood which is spilled, blood of the covenant. And here also, there is blood which is spilled. In a previous podcast, I have discussed the relationship between Brit Milah and sacrifice. And not only that, but in Parshat Bo, chapter 12, the central feature of the first Passover Seder is the Korban Pesach, the Paschal Lamb. But there is an integral inner connection between Korban Pesach and Brit Milah. Both of them are positive commandments, which if not fulfilled, are punished with karet, being cut off from the Jewish people. Both of them are core expressions of Jewish peoplehood. Both of them involve sacrifice. Both of them involve spilling blood. Both of them are expressions of total commitment. And this is what is happening in our section. The Jewish people, by bringing these sacrifices, are expressing their total commitment to God. Two sacrifices, types of sacrifices, are being brought. Olot and Shlamim. Olot are burnt offerings. The meaning of a Korban Olah is that one is prepared to completely dedicate themselves to the will of God. The model of that is the story of Avraham in the Akedah, who is asked to offer up his son as an Olah, and in the end offers up the ram instead. Avraham in the Akedah demonstrates this total service of God. Shlamim is a peace offering. A Korban Shlamim is brought specifically for the purpose of eating, but eating as a community. The Korban Shlamim expresses the unity of the community. When the Jewish people enter the covenant, on the one hand, they express their total dedication to God. And in fact, this is articulated when the Jewish people say in our section, in verse 7, all that God has said, we will do and we will listen. We will listen can be understood as we will understand. The doing precedes the understanding. The commitment to doing precedes the hearing of the mitzvah. This expresses the unconditional commitment to God. Whatever God says, we will do. Even before I hear it, and I know what it is, even before I understand it, I am prepared to do the will of God. But what is also happening here is the bonding of the Jewish people in this covenantal agreement. The people, all together, in one voice, commit themselves to God. They acknowledge their common bond. I have mentioned this on other occasions. A precondition to the covenant is unity. And so at this moment, there is the merging of the total commitment to God and the sense of unity among the people. And this covenant is sealed in blood. Half of the blood is placed on the altar, expressing the relationship with God, and half of the blood is sprinkled on the people, expressing the relationship, the bond, between all the different elements of the Jewish people. All of the events of the Exodus were leading up to this moment. By Abraham, there are two covenants. There is chapter 15, the covenant of the parts, and chapter 17, the covenant of Brit Milah. In many ways, the covenant between the parts is an expression of Abraham's faith in God. Before the covenant is introduced, it says, and Abraham believed in God. It's a faith, it's a commitment that says, whatever happens, I am connected to God. I am connected to the land of Israel. In many ways, it's parallel to engagement between a couple. According to Jewish law, when a couple is engaged, they become bound to each other. The second covenant by Abraham in chapter 17 is comparable to marriage, where it's not just that we make a commitment, but we are now ready to live together. The Jewish people, when they leave Egypt, experience the splitting of the Red Sea. The splitting of the Red Sea was an unbelievable test of their faith. And in the aftermath, we're told, they believe in Hashem and in Moshe, his servant. As a result of the splitting of the Red Sea, a bond was forged between the Jewish people and God and Moshe, a bond of faith, like an engagement. But now we're getting ready for the marriage. This is what happens at Sinai. At this point, the people will now be living together with God. It is not coincidental that immediately after, in Parshat Truma, we are given the instructions for the construction of the tabernacle. Because the whole purpose of this covenant is to now create this lasting relationship between God and the Jewish people, a relationship of marriage. And the relationship of marriage is sealed in blood. Sacrifice. The sense that to make it work, there has to be give and take. People have to be prepared to push themselves. Okay, give of themselves. I mentioned earlier the argument between Rashi and Ramban as to the chronology of this section. If we follow Rashi's approach, It may very well be that Rashi feels before there can be the revelation at Sinai, the Jewish people need to enter the covenant. The revelation is kind of the icing to the cake. When the Jewish people enter the covenant, God's response is to reveal himself in all his glory to the people. And if we were to look at the example of Avraham, Avraham does Brit Milah, he enters the covenant, and then afterwards God appears to him. And according to the rabbinic understanding, God came to visit the sick. God speaks to him. But God's speech is only in response to his initiative. And this is how Rashi understands it. We have to make the first move. We have to be entering the covenant. Only afterwards does God reveal himself. Nachmanides says that the covenant is after the revelation. And it could very well be, besides Nachmanides' general approach, that things have to be in chronological sequence. That Nachmanides feels, when the people enter the covenant, it should be very clear to them beforehand who they are entering into a relationship with and how that will play itself out. Which means it is important for them to experience God in all of God's glory, to experience that sense of awe and trepidation at Sinai. It is very important for them to realize that it isn't just I am entering into a relationship with this overwhelming being, but there are very serious demands being placed. First, in terms of the major principles of the Ten Commandments. Secondly, in terms of the very nitty-gritty day-to-day laws being outlined in the beginning of Parshat Mishpatim. So that only when the people appreciate the full magnitude of what is being asked of them, does their acceptance, when they say Na'aseh v'nishma, have all of its meaning. Why is this section, according to Rashi, separated from last week's parsha? Why is this section out of chronological sequence? It would seem to me that Rashi would say that in last week's section, we want to highlight God's coming to man. We want to highlight the revelation, the magnitude of the revelation, the awe, the difficulty. In our parsha, we want to highlight man coming to God. The Jewish people who rise to the occasion, who are not trembling, who are not blown away, but rather the Jewish people who build an altar, who say Na'aseh v'nishma, who seem to be so committed and so dedicated, so active. So it is a different angle on the events of Sinai. Each one is highlighting a different feature. Last week we highlight God coming to man, this week, man approaching God. I would like to end by making a number of comments on Parshat Shkalim. Let us look at the opening verses. Chapter 30, verses 11 through 16. And God said to Moshe, "When you lift up the head of the Jewish people to be counted, and they shall give each man a ransom of his soul to God, as they're being counted. And there shall not be a plague in the process of counting them. And this is what they shall give, all those who pass for the count, a half a shekel, a gift to God. All those who are passing to be counted from the age of 20 and above shall give Trumat Hashem, this gift of God. The rich person shall not increase the amount. The poor person shall not diminish from a half a shekel to give the contribution of God to atone for their souls. The section of Machtzit HaShekel primarily addresses the reality when a census is taken, and specifically what appears later on in the beginning of the book of Bamidbar, when they are being counted for the purpose of now becoming an army going out to war. They should not be counted 1, 2, 3, but the way they are to be counted is by the giving of a half a shekel, where the shekels will be counted, and through that we will know the number of the Jewish people. Why is it that they are to give a half a shekel rather than a whole shekel? It would seem to be the half shekel is expressing that they are half a person as an individual. They only become complete when they dedicate themselves to the community. When they are being counted, they in effect are being counted upon to become active members of the Jewish people. In the context of the psukim, they are active members for the purpose of becoming an army for warfare. Later on, when the temple is established, there is an obligation of giving half a shekel every year for the upkeep of the temple. A half shekel that goes to all the communal sacrifices. And that is why we read the section before Rosh Chodesh Adar, because in fact, on Rosh Chodesh Adar, there was an announcement which was made that all the half shekels should be brought in before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. They're given a month's notice, because the fiscal year in the temple went from Nisan to Nisan. Because starting Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they would bring the sacrifices, the communal sacrifices, from the new money that was collected in the month of Adar. There is a rabbinic comment brought down in the Jerusalem Talmud that says that the shkalim, the half shekels, which the Jewish people gave towards the upkeep of the temple, ultimately saved them from the shkalim which Haman hoped to collect when the decree to kill the Jews would be enforced. The money that he would bring to Ahasuerus's treasury. And this is the connection between our reading the Parsha of Shkalim with the story of Purim. That somehow the giving of the half shekel is a preemptive strike that prevents what Haman wanted to do to the Jews. It is what saves us. What is the deeper meaning behind this? I think that the point of this statement in the Talmud is that what saves us from destruction is our acknowledgement that we are a people. The half shekel says, I am not just an individual, but I am part of a people. Haman describes the Jewish people as being very divided. Amalek attacks the Jewish people when they are very weak. The strength of the Jewish people is reflected in our unity. The half shekel is what reminds us that to be whole, we need to be contributing to be part of a community. But it's not just that we're part of a community, but we're part of a community which is rooted in God. I contribute towards what will be used in service of God. In the same way that in our parsha, the Jewish people come together in their covenantal experience by bringing sacrifices to God. Later on, they come together by contributing the half shekel to the communal offerings that will be brought in the temple, the communal offerings that can be a source of atonement for us, the communal offerings that somehow invite the presence of God in our midst. It says in the beginning of Parshat Shkalim, when you raise up the head of those being counted, Kitisat Rosh, raising one's head means acknowledging that individual. It means that I consider you to be somebody who's important. Although our parsha speaks of the Jewish people coming together as a people in this covenantal relationship with God, it does not take away from the fact that the people is the sum of the individuals. Every individual has to see themselves as being part of that covenant. When they are now being called upon, the people ultimately are the product, is the product of those individuals that it can count on. And therefore, all those people who are giving a half a shekel need to acknowledge how their contribution is essential to the functioning of the community. The other word which appears in that section is lifkudehem. Pkudehem is a word for numbers. But in Hebrew, the word pkuda is related, or pakod, is related to the idea of tafkid, role. The ones who are counted are being given a role. The ones who contribute play a role. The idea of giving shkalim is the idea that I don't just identify with the community, but I contribute to the community. I play a role in the community. In the case of the half shekel, the rich does not increase. The poor do not diminish. Everyone has an equal role to play. Everyone should see that they play a significant role in the community. There are times when we can minimize and marginalize the roles of certain individuals in the community. But the message of Machtzit HaShekel is that the strength of the community rests on the foundation of everyone contributing. It is critical that we don't have the community rest on the shoulders of a few individuals, even where those few individuals could support the whole community. It is important to have everyone be a part, and that everyone should realize that the community needs each one of its members. As I mentioned before, the events of Purim were triggered by a reality where the Jews were very much a divided people. The victory of Purim, the celebration of Purim, is when the Jews were able to close ranks And despite the fact that Esther and Mordechai played a very significant role in that happening, they ultimately needed the support of the general Jewish population. Without them, it could never have happened. We live in a reality where in many levels we are a divided people. Whether it be between Jews living in the diaspora and Jews living in Israel, within Israel, the divisions between secular and religious, between native Israelis and immigrants, between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, there are many things that can divide us. But if we are going to actualize our destiny, then we have to learn the message of this week's parsha. To be able to come together in one voice, to be able to somehow find the common denominator which every single person can be part of, so that in the end we can experience redemption. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schwager. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send an email to us at podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.